this puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And Sunday is also when you tune in to hear Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society. He's with us right now. Good morning, Gordo.
Good morning, Bruce.
So just remind our listeners of the clue from last week.
Well, you know, when we talk about abandoned things, such as we do here, occasionally changes in status occur. You know, a building, for example, we might have talked about has been demolished.
Right.
So I thought I would bring our listeners up to date on a few changes that have occurred since our last update episode that was actually a little over a year ago.
Yeah, and you sent me this list and it looks great. So let's get right into it. Let's talk first about hopper cars.
Right. So last August, I talked about hopper cars. Basically, it's an innovative railway technology that was introduced in 1972 as a more efficient way to transport grain and other sort of flowable commodities. And what I was talking about back then was that there was a string of 258 hoppers. And I know the exact number because I flew my drone over them and counted them. That all belonged to the Alberta government. And for some reason, they had been abandoned sitting on a rail line near the village of DeLow, southwest of Brandon. And they'd been there for years. The local farmers were not happy because they tended to collect snow in the wintertime. Well, so I talked about them, and amazingly, within weeks, the hoppers were gone. So I don't know whether this discussion played a role in maybe motivating the railway to get them away, but at least the farmers are happy. But I should point out that this was not the only string of abandoned hoppers. So there is, for example, a long string of them that remained at least as recently as a few weeks ago, east of Graysville in the RM of Dufferin, a great big long string again that's been there for a very long time.
Maybe you just reminded them of the hopper cars. Maybe they forgot where they were.
Well, maybe, I guess.
Who knows? Great drone footage, though. I saw that video. Let's move on to the next one, from hopper cars to railway ties.
A little later than that, the episode on the hopper cars, I talked about a small building southeast of Porters-la-Prairie that, as near as we can tell, was built in the late 1920s using railway ties salvaged from an abandoned line of something called the Midland Railway that had run from Neche, North Dakota to Portage. And you can tell they were railway ties because when you take away the metal panels that were covering them, you could actually still see the indentations where the rails had crossed them. I was told about the building by the person who owned it, and he wanted me to see it before he tore it down because he said it's in very poor condition. The floor is sagging into the root cellar, so he was a little worried that it was becoming dangerous. The building, therefore, has now been demolished. Mm.
Okay, let's move on. The next one, how about bomb shelters?
Yeah, this one was really interesting. You know, back in September last fall, I was told about an underground structure. It basically was a corrugated metal pipe sticking straight out of the ground that it had a ladder going down maybe 8-10 feet. And then there was a larger metal tube below ground. And in this particular case that I was told about, there were two bunk beds and some shelving. My research indicated that, in fact, it had been built in 1962 as a facility to monitor radioactive fallout. Because they were worried, of course, that Soviets were going to drop a nuclear bomb, and of course it was going to lead to all kinds of radiation. So they were going to monitor it. They were going to build 200 of these monitoring posts around Manitoba. Well, since the original broadcast, I have heard from several listeners with clues to other such posts. So one person, for example, told me about one in the basement of the former RCMP detachment in McCreary, Manitoba. Another told me about one in southeastern Manitoba near the corner of the province that is beside a fire tower. And then just recently, I heard about one at a popular summer resort. And I have to leave it as vague as that because they were quite concerned about making too many people aware of it. But apparently it's still there, and a few people at least know about it.
These do exist.
They do. And so I'm really curious to know how many of them exist. There's probably many more than what we know.
So now on to something that happened earlier this year in the Exchange District, the Orange Lodge.
Yeah, I reported a sort of a bad news story where a building that was being renovated, something called the Scott Memorial Hall on Princess Street, it was going to be turned into a residence. They were going to turn it into I guess, condos. But unfortunately, it sustained some damage to its foundation. And so when I was talking about it on the air, I said, well, I suspect that the cost of fixing it is going to be too high, and it's probably going to therefore not be possible to be restored. Well, in fact, that was the case. And back in February, a month after we talked about it, the building did come down. But faithful listeners know about my fascination with bricks. All right. So I was fortunate to be at the site as the machines were tearing down the building, and I prevailed on one of the demolition workers to collect a brick for me. So at least a small sample of the original Orange Hall survives in my personal brick collection.
Was there, I forget what that's called on the brick there, where you know who made it?
Is
it
the frog? Yes, the indentation. Yeah. There wasn't anything written in the frog, but what there was on one side of the brick, it was painted sort of a pink color. And that's because there was a big Coke sign on the side of the building. And over a year at the time, the red sign of the Coke had sort of faded to pink. So I can prove it was from the building.
Yeah, it's a bonus feature of that brick. Let's move on to the next one, which is something that I was really interested in. I remember you did it earlier this year, single sheet curling rinks.
Yeah. So back in February, I talked about a little place called the Somerville Curling Rink, located northwest of Carberry. It was the abandoned remains of a one-sheet curling rink. In other words, there just was one single rink. And, you know, I speculated that must be one of a kind. Well, fortunately, I'm happy to say that I was wrong. A pair of listeners contacted me to say that there is actually another one-sheet curling rink in Manitoba. It's located southwest of Brandon in the community of Roseland. And best of all, it's still in active use. It's still a curling rink. The Roseland Curling Club was founded in 1948, and it's believed to be the only one-sheet rink left in Manitoba.
Glad to know they're using it. That Somerville Curling Rink was, you know, unusable and abandoned. But
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, good for Roseland. Let's move on now to a TV studio in Churchill, Manitoba.
Yeah, well, so when I visited Churchill a couple of years ago, I was fascinated by a concrete block building that overlooked the big grain terminal in Churchill. I was told that it had been a staff residence that in the 1960s and 70s had hosted a local television station. And I believed when I first talked about it on the air that it had dated to the original construction of the terminal building in the 1930s. However, a listener contacted me to say that she had been told that the staff house was built around 1950. You know, so I'm actually still looking for photos of Churchill that will clarify when the staff house was built, whether in the 1930s or in the 1950s. And I'm a stickler. I want to know exactly if I can. But the role that it played as the home for Canada's first community-based TV station, as far as I know, is still unchallenged.
Interesting. Okay, next one, Neighborhood Safeways. This is great.
Yeah, long-standing grocery store chain here in Manitoba. And they started back in 1929, but they didn't have big stores like they have today. They had smaller stores sprinkled throughout the various residential neighborhoods. The idea being is that you could walk, you know, a short distance to your local Safeway and get a wide range of goods that were safe, that were, you know, affordable. So this transformed shopping for many neighborhoods here in Winnipeg. We tried to find out how many of the original Safeway stores were still standing. They have a very characteristic storefront look, so they're fairly easy to see, although some of them have been renovated so significantly that it's kind of hard to tell. But I was also interested in finding ones outside of Winnipeg, which made it was a lot harder to find because, for example, I didn't have access to things that would tell me the history of the buildings in some of the rural towns. So since the original episode aired, our tally now stands at 43 Safeways, and we found three more in towns outside of Winnipeg that we didn't know about back then. So there, we know now that there was a Safeway in Boisevain, there was one in Killarney, and there was one in Verdun. They're all still there.
Let's move on now to a one-room shack at Delta Beach that was called the Skylark. I remember this from a few months ago.
Right. You know, we talked about this little shack at Delta Beach that had been the former home of something called a home child. Basically, it was a man who had come to Canada as a child because he either had no parents, he was an orphan, or his parents simply couldn't look after them. And a lot of people in Canada have ancestors who were home children. Well, the house that was there, and I was told on good authority that it was the Skylark. It was his former home. But a listener contacted me to say that no, in fact, the Skylark was another building that was similar in size, similar in features to the one that was there, but it was gone. It had been destroyed in a grass fire a few years ago. So Skylark, not Skylark, I don't know that we're ever going to have a definitive answer to the question. But if you want to see what it would have looked like, even if it wasn't that particular building, it is still there, that little building at Delta Beach.
Okay, next, outhouses made of stone or other heavy materials.
I have to be careful and sort of dance around this one a little bit, because there's a popular expression about an outhouse made of bricks. Mm. You know, so in this case, I talked about an outhouse made of stone that was located south of Balder. And we at the time didn't know, for example, why they would have built it out of stone. In fact, a listener contacted me to say, well, it was because the person who had built it, his mother-in-law, had come from England and was worried that if she went to use the outhouse in the night, that she might be set upon by bears. Now, I'm not sure how many bears there are in the vicinity of Balder, but I guess I was joking, of course, that this must be the only one of its kind. I was telling this to a friend of mine a few weeks ago, and he said, well, you know that there's a brick outhouse north of Deloraine, don't you? I go, well, no, I don't. So it turns out there is a genuine brick blank house near Deloraine. I can't disclose its exact location at the request of the owner.
Still in daily use, though. Who knows?
Well, no, I'm told it isn't used either. But same basic technique, though. It had sort of a bucket that you put underneath that would collect the waste.
And just from a couple of weeks back, orphanages.
Yeah. So, you know, 2 weeks ago, our conversation was about orphanages, and I mentioned that there had been one for girls only. There were others that had room for both boys and girls, but I wasn't aware of one for boys only. And a listener reminded me about the facility at Otterburn that was called Maison Saint-Joseph. It was run by a monastic order from Montreal, and it was an orphanage for boys. It operated from 1912 to 1954. The building is still there. It's no longer used as an orphanage, of course. It is actually the home for Providence College now.
And as listeners know, you have a fascination for the one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah, my personal mission is to find as many of them as I can, and I have found lots of them, and I'm always pained when I hear about one that's no longer present. So just the other day, I heard from a person that said that the Little Mountain School, that's just on the edge of Winnipeg, it's sort of in the south, the northwest corner of the city, that it was recently demolished, as recently as about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Oh. It came down. And my other fascination, which listeners will recall, is the one about grain elevators. Mm-hmm. Of course, I've reported on ones of those that are disappearing. Well, listeners may be interested to know that the elevator at LaSalle, Manitoba, is reportedly going to be demolished this coming week, either Tuesday or Wednesday, according to my sources.
Wow.
So that once prominent vision across the prairies, LaSalle, unfortunately, will be, you know, no longer.
That's a shame.
I want to just remind our listeners that I am, of course, utterly dependent on help from people all over the province to keep me informed about changes. You know, so if they are aware of any changes in any of the places that I talk about, or if they're interested in history and they know about places that have been demolished through time, they want to tell me about, let me know, please.
Excellent. Well, thanks for all these, Gordon. These are great updates. Give us the clue for next week.
Well, we're going to talk about the Manitoba towns of Coendy, Mandan, St. Louis, and more. And you've probably never heard of any of them, but they're not ghost towns.
Hmm. Interesting. Thanks for that, Gordon. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk next week. Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.